I've been able to do it, and would they be so kind as to ask me if I've done it that day? And probably about 25% of them remember. So I just one day just don't quite do it, and I walk out the door, and somebody says, "Oh, did you meditate this morning?" And I go, "Thank you." And by the fourth one, our phone call. "Hi, Sess, did you meditate?" "Thank you." "I'm going to go do it right now." It's a very, very interesting thing to use your community. You know, your community is your guide. And you don't have to just use your special little important, because we're all Buddhists in this, you know, Judeo-Christian culture. Community, you can use your community. Mm-hmm. And the people who are closest to you, you make sure you tell them. And smile when you do it, and make a vow that you are not going to tell them exactly why they shouldn't be mentioning that to you, because you're so upset. Because so many things are pressing on you, and you're not going to be able to do it, even if you said. So you get a double discipline from the people you really love, you know, you share so much. And not only do you get the reminder from them, but you also get to say, "Now, I did this to myself, so I better practice patience." It's a good way to learn patience. Patience usually takes a little more than that, but that's a good launching. You know, you did it to yourself, it always makes it, for me, it always makes it more palatable. So try that. Because it's one of the hardest things is to set up a daily practice. In the circumstance, like if you go visit somebody who meditates every day, or, you know, somebody's in town or runs a puja every morning, or... no problem. Oh, I love it. Or you make a vow because things, life sucks, and you start meditating, and then pretty soon life is only occasionally going, most of the time it's kind of sailing along a little better. But it isn't a habit. You didn't watch your parents meditate every day, did you? I didn't watch mine do that either. And in school, did you have like 5 minutes of meditation at the beginning of every class? Mm-hmm. Not in my school. So that narrows it right down, doesn't it? This is something you are trying to do with a lifetime habit of not doing that. So there's going to be that sense of, you know, the habit is stronger. Habit is stronger than just about anything. Habit is the riverbank. This is the way it has flowed before. Riverbanks do change, but usually require, you know, some earthquake or deluge to really change. So, or some kind of dam, you know, that... So use the dam of everybody around you reflecting back what you're... But make sure you really decide that's what you want to do before you tell everybody. Okay. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. An urban retreat, which is what this is basically, from my understanding, a way to take ideas of meditation and work them during the day. As I've already been saying, habit is very strong. So I'm going to keep the pedal, because it cuts through habit, doesn't it? So, the biggest enemy you have, as you've noticed in your life, is the resistance to trying anything a different way. Biggest enemy that there is. The only way that there are two, let's go this way. There are two types of influence on death rebirth. One of them is habit and the other is called garuka kama or heavy action. If there is some trauma or not trauma, but what would you call a pleasant experience that also had a heavy, like a nice trauma? A peak experience, yeah.
Profound.
A profound, like a positive or negative trauma. How about that?
Positive.
Can we go there? Because that's really what I want to talk about. Those are the two ways that your consciousness changes. Consciousness moves. It moves according to habit, or if there is some major event that happens that causes you to think beyond your usual boundaries or feel beyond your usual boundaries. That's pretty straightforward, isn't it? You can see that in your own life. So trying to take awareness into your daily life is really a slog. You know, you can do it for short periods of time if you know you have to go to a class again that night and you have to report that you tried the exercise. That ups the ante a little bit. But there is also a feeling of like, but then the class is over and now I can get back to mine. And even when there is some excitement or interest about what one learned on the actual practice where you actually change the habit, still the habit pulls you back, doesn't it? Does me. I don't see why it wouldn't do that to you. So, it is very useful to hook a habit to some other awareness than you usually hook it to. For example, if you get up in the morning and you always have a cup of coffee first, you get up in the morning, you get your cup of coffee, and then instead of doing it the way you usually do, you sit down somewhere else where there is nothing that's going to involve your mind, and you focus on whatever it is you want to focus on. And you do it for like 5 minutes, or you do it while you drink your coffee. You'll never miss it. You'll never miss all of that you usually get into right away. You get up in the morning, you have a glass of water, and take that glass of water and go and sit somewhere where you feel comfortable. Don't make it a big meditation stool if you don't want to. That's fine. That's not important. But then you make the habit of what you always do. Now you hook it to a different mental experience. That works. Then you have to choose what you want to hook it to. This is the basis in a lot of ways. The Vajrayana, where you take things that are habits, but you turn them toward the divine. It's the basis of a deity practice and things like that. This is the basic principle. Taking desire and turning it toward a mind state embodied as Chenwezi or... And then developing a habit of praying to that mind state. That is to say, invoking that mind state. That energy of that mind state.
So I can take a habit.
Let's say, we're not talking about habits like mugging old ladies in the park. Or, we're talking about wholesome. I'm not suggesting you, but we're talking about, I mean, I just want to make it clear. We're talking about wholesome habits.
Because
you
want to do. Soft spot for old ladies.
I know. Damn, I would pick that up.
Yeah. Oh dear. So say the habit is in the morning I make tea.
Mm-hmm.
So I take the cup, I sit somewhere else so that the mind doesn't get into the usual treadmill.
Mm-hmm. Is where do you usually take your tea?
Uh-huh. My meditation cushion.
Okay, do you actually meditate there?
Yeah.
With your tea? Well, that's fine, how are you doing it?
Can I take another habit?
Sure.
The question I have is, when I take whatever it is and I change it slightly, you know, I take the habit and change it slightly, do I try to focus on something like picking up a pen and looking, examining the pen? Or do I just watch what happens within the mind?
You don't particularly want to watch what happens in the mind.
Okay.
What you want to do, because the mind is always working on past experience. Like the senses actually take data, send it to the brain. The brain does a little, what would you call it, search engine thing goes on. Finds all the related phenomena stored wherever it is on the past, then comes back and says, oh, that's a file folder. Oh, that's a reddish blouse. Oh, that's a red chair. Based on all the past experience. How, whenever you name anything, you're basically living in the past. Your eyeballs don't tell you that. The immediate moment of cognition does not have any names on it. So when you're sitting, you don't particularly want your mind to go over what your mind is doing. What you, it doesn't matter if your mind is doing things that aren't even nonverbal. It's still, you know. What you want to do is establish, slow the mind down by establishing awareness of the body. That's the first really important thing to do. So, for example, if you put a pebble in your shoe, which I'm recommending for you all to do for tomorrow. You can pick the pebble, you can change it, you can change shoes, you can do whatever you want to. You can wear it sometimes, but I would like you to wear it most of the day, a pebble in your shoe. And I will tell you later what it is you, I want you to focus on when you really find it. Sometimes it'll slip between your toes, won't bother you too much, but then every once in a while it's going to really get you. And when it does, you see, you're actually not thinking. Because one of the quickest ways to cut through habituation is when something you don't like arises. What is it? And you're really focused on the physical. So you use that. So in terms of what you're saying about watching the mind, not such a good idea until you've slowed the mind down. And how you slow the mind down is getting the mind to watch the body.
Okay.
Now the mind can think it's watching the body, and you can be quite convinced that's true. Because when the mind is actually watching the body, it's different than when you think you're watching the body. It's not boring. Mm-hmm. That's the first thing about it. It's absolutely involved. Mm-hmm. When you're looking at your picture of your body, it loses interest very quickly. because there's no way for it to sustain. So, you know, you feel your body, and then you feel it again. You can do this really nice thing with your first cup of coffee or tea. You can sit down in the chair, relax, and then have a sip of tea, and then swallow it, and then just feel how that swallow of tea or coffee or whatever, feel how it feels in the body. Follow it down, and then feel. Can you feel a reaction all through your legs? And then you take another sip, you know? So you're actually using a habit to actually break habituation. It's a very useful thing to do. And your awareness picks up. You're less likely to find yourself using your energy badly. Because your mind doesn't know when you're tired, but your body does. That's true. So these are like just little basic things. But what one wants to accomplish with meditation is one wants the mental images that you think are your experiences to slow down. You want the mind, the waves of the mind, to stop. You want them to slow down enough so that you're not getting reflections of past experiences, broken up pieces of experiences blown by the winds of whatever emotion is present in you now. You want to get just a nice, clear mind that isn't giving you a collage of all of the past experiences, pieces and pieces and pieces, and totally the magnification changed because of the emotion. Every emotion gives you a different, what do you call that, magnifying glass, a different power. Right. Fear and hatred have very high magnification powers. You see points really clearly. Love, kindness, they tend to get a little out of focus, blur, the edges blur a little bit. Notice that. I see quite so clearly. You look at something when you're in a bad mood, you see everything that's wrong with it. Oh, it's quite nice around here. That's a good mood. So you want to be able to see things. If you want to see, be able to see things as they are, which I think everybody should try to do once or twice in their life, just, you know, for something completely different. Send a postcard from there to your parents or whatever. Then there are two things that you're going to have to work with, and one is called view, and the other is called emotion. The emotion cannot be in conflict, and the view needs to be not hooked to preference. Preference. Now there's a good one. And in the cover of that notebook, Barbara, I know Barbara is an interloper from the urban retreat she's visiting from Toronto, and she's an old friend. I'll give it right back to you. Okay. So, this is what the Buddha has to say. It is good to abide. Now, how many times have you heard this?
A few. Several. Many.
It is good to abide from time to time in perceiving the non-beautiful and the beautiful. to abide from time to time in perceiving the beautiful in the non-beautiful. I like the way he does that. I like that. From time to time.
Yeah, don't try to do it all the time. So.
For what reason? To see the non-beautiful in the beautiful, so that no lust arises in me. For what reason to see the beautiful in the non-beautiful, so that no hate arises in me? For what reason should one overcome the beautiful and the unbeautiful? So that one remains mindful with clear comprehension and equanimity. Do you want me to read it again?
Yes.
I may seem to be writing it down this time. I guess maybe if I start reading it again, you'll say, we've already got it. Gets better the more times you hear it, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
It is good to abide from time to time in perceiving the non-beautiful in the beautiful.
And the beautiful or in the beautiful?
In the beautiful. The non-beautiful in the beautiful.
Thank you.
To abide from time to time in perceiving the beautiful in the non-beautiful. I was reading this every day for quite a while, so I finally wrote it in my notebook so I could just take it with me. For what reason? To see the non-beautiful in the beautiful. So that no lust arises in me. For what reason to see the beautiful in the non-beautiful? So?
So no hate arises in me.
So no hate arises in me. For what reason should one overcome the beautiful and the non-beautiful? So that one remains mindful with clear comprehension and equanimity. This is steering. This is how you learn how to steer. If you find you know it, you think you're going to get something and then you don't get it, or everything turns against you, or blah 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 blah, it could be you don't know how to steer. This is so that you can clearly comprehend both the inner and the outer. It doesn't mean you make yourself never want anything. I'm just going to be a good Buddhist. I'm totally a Buddhist now. Because that's crap. That's crap. It's not anything. That's like basically, you might as well take tranquilizers. Okay? That is not compassionate. It's not human. It's not being this gift of a life. But not to be swayed by every time there's beautiful or unbeautiful. Not to be pushed around by every time there's like or dislike. To be able to see something clearly, feel the like or dislike, see something clearly, and then say, okay, and is there something I'm not seeing about it? Is there something I'm not seeing about it? Isn't that nice? Wouldn't that be lovely? I can think of about 30 love affairs I wish I'd known that about before. You know? I mean, don't you know? It's true, isn't it? I mean, it's just like so many things that you do. You don't have a clue. Because it's, oh, that's so beautiful. Oh, that's so unbeautiful. And half the time you don't even see yourself thinking that. Mm-hmm. Habit. Mm-hmm. It's like pulled from your heart. You know, you're pulled from however you feel at the moment. You know, sun shining is... Oh, he was wearing a gray t-shirt. Oh, sigh. Mm-hmm. Sun shining. Oh, she was wearing a yellow feather. Oh, sigh. But where's the balance in that? How do you steer? How do you allow yourself to feel what you're feeling and then say, now, I wonder what else is happening other than my private little movie. My private little movie theater with my own popcorn, you know, my own projectionist. What else is playing? So it is good to abide from time to time. So that's how you're going to use the pebble this time. By every once in a while when you're all of a sudden, because like Trudy, what happened with your pebble? What was the first thing you told me last week? One of the things you told me was that
I got used to it.
She got used to it. She could override it. Isn't that brilliant? We can make anything into a habit. Oh, it's going to be very... If you actually do this, it's very interesting. You learn a lot. And so when you actually are suddenly aware of the pebble, what I want you to do is look and consider whatever it was that you were about to do and ask yourself, was it because of the beautiful or was it because of the unbeautiful? That I, you know, when I was motivated to do this, was there a sense within myself of the beautiful or the unbeautiful in doing it? Okay? Is that clear? Mm-hmm. Not clear?
Yeah.
Okay, and then apply the opposite.
Hold on a second,
please. Okay. Is that pretty clear? You all understand that?
Could you actually give me an example of what you're saying?
Here? So you decide you're really going to get what? You're really going to... What an example. You're really going to go get your wallet because you want to go and do the shopping because you got to, you know, you want to get that done before you do... And you're walking and the pebble just suddenly strikes and you just stop for a moment. And you say, okay, what was I doing? I was already, my mind was already in the store. I was already figuring out, you know, what the shopping, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, and what was the feeling of that? And usually it's a feeling of lust when you're thinking ahead in the future. It's like, oh, I'm going to get this finished. And it's like this hunger, lust. Trying for the future is usually what they call in Buddhism becoming. Mm-hmm. You're too busy in the next moment, you're not in this one.
Right.
And then immediately I would like you to put the unbeautiful in there. And if I walked out the right door right now, I could get hit by a car. So much for becoming. And then just feel how that changes your body sense. Feel how that changes your feeling. Your mind's rushing ahead. Feel where you are. Is that a good example?
Thank you.
Yeah. And then, having found yourself in your body, you all got that much written down? So you use the pebble to apply that. You want a piece of paper? You got a perfect memory?
Well, I don't probably. I'd like to think that I do, but should I have paper? Yeah, I'd like one. Yeah, that's really.
Are you gonna do this exercise? I'm presuming she's got paper now. She needs something to write on.
I can use the pad. Okay. Thank you.
So you're going to look for the beautiful in the unbeautiful and the unbeautiful in the beautiful when the pebble catches your attention. You're going to notice what your motive was just before. And usually when you feel the pebble, you're going to be annoyed. So you're going to notice what it was that was interrupted. Notice what it was that was interrupted. And then if it was lust, you antidote it with a little bit of, you know, a cold shower. And if it was hate, you put some, you know, soft music and roses in the atmosphere. Maybe a gypsy violinist in the corner, you know. I mean, if you have any trouble with that one, call me. I'll give you some ideas. That's if the pebble actually interrupts your mind going ahead. The rest of the time, when you feel the pebble, there will already be a sense. I want you to be glad that you can feel it because that reminds you of where you are. And then whenever you can, in either one of these cases, you use that opportunity to think, I'm grateful to be here. And may I be well in this life. And happy with this life. And may this life serve for friendliness. Or serve friendliness. Not only for myself, but for all beings. Got all that? Mm-hmm. And drop it. And get on with your day. And then the next time, again, it comes up. Because until you learn to steer, you can't actually practice kindness. Mm-hmm. Until you have focused on watching and not believing your preferences, you can't actually practice kindness. You can practice kindness on those moments when you're swinging in between the two, the two poles of the beautiful and the unbeautiful, but for the rest of the time, you cannot actually do it whenever you might want to. Mm-hmm. And if you can't practice kindness, you cannot see things as they are. So you have to be equally kind inside and outside for the waters to still, for the mind to settle, to be clear enough to be able to see things as they are. The first step is learning how to work with preference. And the peak of knowing how to work with preference is to be to just have a sense of kindness for yourself, for all beings, all times. It's called loving kindness usually in Buddhism, and it's a boundless state. Was that a little different this time? Do you have any questions?
Well, when you began, there was the talk of how to maintain a daily practice, but I was sort of wondering what constitutes a daily practice. So you've just given us the first ingredient of a daily practice?
The first ingredient of a daily practice is interest. Interest in actually learning how mind states and body function, and wanting to make choices rather than just reacting to the condition states. And in order to make those choices at some time or other, it will be necessary to establish some time where you sit still and just explore the inner.
Mm-hmm.
However long that time is will depend on your circumstances. It can be 5 minutes if you use it. For me, 5 minutes, I spend too much time in discursive thought, so it has to be a few hours. 5 minutes worth out of about 3 hours. That's not entirely true, but there's certainly some truth in it. Mm-hmm. The length of time is not so important. What is important for daily practice is regularity. It doesn't matter if you only sit 5 minutes, as long as you always sit for 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes people think, oh well, I'm going to try to sit an hour, but if I can't, at least I sat every day. But it's actually better, because habit is habit. You can sit for 5 minutes, then you can increase it to 10, and you can do 10 minutes every day, and that will be your habit. Every once in a while you miss breakfast. Or you don't go to the bathroom when you usually do. But it's not one of those things you put off too long. And I guess so, it's just like going to the bathroom. You don't like putting it off because it's too painful. And if you keep putting it off, it can cause embarrassment. What's that Zen saying? If I don't meditate for 1 day, I notice. If I don't meditate for 2 days, my enemies notice. If I don't meditate for 3 days, everybody notices. Enemies first, though. Enemies have almost as sharp an eye as you yourself. Watching what you're doing. Oh, I see she didn't meditate. Well, I know we don't have any enemies, people in this room. Is that a reasonable response?
Mm-hmm.
Any other questions, answers, comments, complaints? So, shall I give you a sitting meditation to do too? Mm-hmm. It's going to be the same one, the Tibetan style. This is the Tibetan style of doing loving kindness practice.
Masters.
Masters. I thought it would be interesting to do because a lot of you have done a lot of the Theravadin way of practicing loving kindness, so it's nice to learn something different. So you're going to have to write these steps down. Step one, remember some not over the top moment of happiness within the last 24 hours. Not like wildly ecstatic, you know, lifted to cloud nine or anything like that, but some just quiet contentment, feeling of, you know, at ease. Recall where you were. What you were wearing, more detail that you can put into it, the more clear the memory will get. So that you really actually have to recall that feeling. Identify it as kindness. This is kindness. You can say loving kindness if you want to, or just kindness, it doesn't matter. Having established that, recall someone dear to you who is not a sexual partner. Usually in the Tibetan tradition, people have very nice mothers. It isn't always people's experience in the West, isn't always a mother, so you don't have to use mother. But it's always interesting to play with it too, other than one's habitual view, to get back to those memories that have more kindness experienced from that person. It's always nice to play with it as well. But it doesn't matter. Pick someone who was present, especially when you were young, who you have a sense of that very, very fond love for, someone very dear to you, and not a sexual partner. A parent for whom there is appreciation is ideal, so the usual suggestion is to image one's mother. So then you spend some time visualizing that person. And this is important too. I mean, when I'm saying do it more than with the intellect, what I mean is that you actually use your sense memories to actually recall the person and then the bodily sense of them. So remember a dress they wore, or, you know, a t-shirt they wore, or where they liked to sit, or, you know, what their shoes were like, or depending on your age, you know. A lot of my early memories are from about the hips down of people. So maybe that's what you will get. A smell. Was there a particular smell they had? Actually go shopping for it a bit, so you have quite a strong sense of that. And it actually gets so that there's a sense of their presence. You feel like they could almost be there beside you. That's the best way to look at this practice. So that's step one. Step two? So step one is basically remember kindness so that you know you know what it is, and then allow yourself to recall somebody for whom from whom you felt kindness and for whom you felt kindness. We're kind of real chorus here.
I'm starting coughing.
Do you have fisherman's friends?
Sure, I do.
Fisherman's friends?
Non-sugar fisherman's friends. We should have put you two on one side of the room. Yeah.
Thank you.
And so step two is now start remembering the kindness you received from that person.
Step two of what?
Step one was remember kindness, and then...
Oh, happiness.
Oh, happiness, yeah, kindness. And then sometime when you were content, at ease, mm-hmm. and say, okay, this is kindness. And then extend that to somebody who you felt that relationship with.
Okay.
All right. Now step two is Now elaborate on what kind of kindness, some moment, some event of that flow of energy between you, when they held your hand once, or, you know. If it's your mother, you can even go so far as to think about her carrying you in her body until you were born. Actually going through birth. My God, a heroic thing to do. For most of our mothers, more than once. Without once sewing her vagina shut, I mean, that's pretty good. My mother had 4 babies. Incredible. And then how you were fed and bathed, you know. And all of our kind friends feed us one way or the other. We're nourished many ways. So in a way bring an energy, renew our energy with a bathing of some kind. The music of them, whether they sang or didn't. How they cared for you, stayed with you in difficult times, or thinking about them in difficult times helped you, right? Taught you new ways to see, just by being the friend. And many of the things that you now take for granted came from this kind, nurturing friend, mother, whoever, this being, right? And you are focusing on one or two acts now that particularly stand out for you. So now pick one or two moments that are particularly of value to you. And you focus on them. Step 3. This person who did these acts is caught. I'm going to just quote this to you. In the endless web of reacting to circumstances, blindly trying to find satisfaction in an unsatisfactory existence. I really would like you to say that line, you know, because it's true. Any of us who aren't conscious all the time are reacting to circumstances.
Could you be so kind as to just repeat it?
This person is caught. Trying to find satisfaction in an unsatisfactory existence. And that part's true, too. So we're always looking for satisfaction. And it is impossible to be satisfied.
You mean beyond a moment?
Mm-hmm. You can experience satisfaction. Does it stay? That's dissatisfactory.
I want my money back.
Oh, I didn't pay. Oh, I'm paid.
Does that clear any other questions about that? Anybody disagree with it or can't see why they would say that? Seems like a depressing thought. I'm not going there.
Well, it is a depressing thought. It's true for many people, right? But I don't know if it has to be true for all people.
Okay. Tell me somebody it isn't true for. Let you know.
What, you want me to name someone?
I'm just asking if you can tell me something.
Well,
that you know that isn't true in their life.
To quote, blindly trying to find satisfaction in an unsatisfactory existence. Like, I guess philosophically, I can see that when we're constantly striving for something, like the lust that you described, that we'll never really attain it. We only attain moments of it, and then we've attained that, and therefore we want more. Like, I can see that as sort of a greed, mm-hmm. whatever. But that's the blindness part, right? That's the unconscious.
No, the blindness is hoping that we can be, thinking that this will satisfy us or that will satisfy us, or hoping that we can be satisfied. Because so long as you are in a body, the body continuously requires conditions to maintain itself. So there is this continuous need,
mm-hmm.
continuous hunger.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, never ends. It never ends, no matter what you do. So long as we exist, there is dissatisfaction.
Mm-hmm.
Breathe in, you have to damn well breathe out. Looking at somebody, you have to blink. You have to wipe your eyes again. You have to do it again. Do it again. There's this continuous, the whole body is this continuous little dance of movement all the time to maintain a feeling of no feeling, which is satisfactory. So that you can be present to everything else. Maybe you're going to get something. Or, why do people study Buddhism or want to meditate? So they can get something. And it's very rarely what Buddhism teaches or what the meditation teaches. But very few people that I know who study Buddhism are the least bit interested in the actual goals of Buddhism. But that's okay. Because the number one thing that Buddhism is good for is for alleviating the unnecessary suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So all the techniques along the way, a lot of people just drop off. You know, okay, I got as far as, I just want to be able to have a gold card, okay, I got that. Oh, I just wanted some friends, okay, I got that. Oh, I just wanted to be unemployed, oh, I got that. You know, whatever. Very few people actually will take Buddhism to where it says it's going.
Mm-hmm.
Because very few people are interested in really looking at the essential state of ignorance in which we all dwell. It's very hard to look at old age. It's very hard to look at sickness. It's very hard to look at death. There is not one person in this room who is not either experiencing one of those three, or going to experience one, or has experienced one. These are the rules, not the exception. I don't see any commercials on... Are you looking forward to your death? All of us are dying. Isn't it fun? Or, you know, I don't see anything evoking desire. It's all to get away from those. That's blind. If somebody starts talking about old age or death or sickness and everybody thinks it's morbid or... Oh, that's not interesting. Let's evoke some desire for other than what is present. Desire almost always is for what is not present. If it was present, you wouldn't desire it.
Mm-hmm.
Desire itself makes you feel like you're getting somewhere. It's blind. left. Is that useful? Mm-hmm. It's in a lot of ways not subtle at all, and in many ways very, very subtle. Mm-hmm. Very, very subtle. And who would believe that there would be any value at all in getting the mind to just stop? Just stop for just like a minute and just see what is present in the here and now. Very few people I know have the least bit interested in it. I have a great interest in it, but I have to fight myself every step of the way when I'm doing my practice. Because there's one part of me that really would rather not. Thank you very much. Oh, this is a really good idea. Let's do it tomorrow. Buddha said that when he awakened, that is to say when he looked directly into the face of ignorance, the fear was so great that the hair on the back of his head stood on end. I can believe that. I'm not convinced you're interested. Doesn't matter if I'm convinced, though, does it? I'm not even convinced I'm interested. I'm just going to take it as far as I can. And with the help of my friends and some good teachers, there's a chance I'll get a little closer to being convinced I want to do this. But really, there is one part of me that really thinks it would be really good if I am in this life where I am held on top of the majority of how beings on this world are living right now with an intelligence that can see that it didn't at least once just shut up about my own particular individual's likes and dislikes, wants and hopes and fears. Shut my mouth, quit trying to look in the past, quit trying to drag up the past, quit trying to look into the future, and just say, what's going on? So maybe, you know, one flash of it might be interesting to pass that back. I don't know many people that are going to do that. Do you? We're all very busy, aren't we? Ooh, ooh, my yes. Just so, I am so busy. I mean, one good brain tumor often takes care of that busyness. Or even a bad one. A mediocre brain tumor would do it just as well. A truck or a car or a fire. There are more ways of dying than there are of living. More directions that death can come at you, in you, out you, up you, down you. How come we don't like thinking about it? That's not so hard, is it? Because this desire, because we are dissatisfied, because the state of existence is dissatisfactory, this desire gets aimed at all kinds of things around us, and we would rather just keep running than turn around and look at the dissatisfactoriness. Anything but look at the dissatisfaction. So don't we have just elaborate plans, though, my dear? I mean, aren't we just wonderful? I mean, we can be very busy and really excellent work. Can't we?
I'm seriously unemployed. I'm seriously employed. I'm seriously half employed. I'm.
Read the paper.
Wonderful stuff.
I guess the part that I struggle with is not the philosophical questions that you're raising, but how do you deal with that pragmatically in your life? Like,
acknowledge it.
For sure. Yeah, acknowledge satisfaction, acknowledge dissatisfaction, acknowledge unhappiness, acknowledge emotions, acknowledge where you are in your body, mm-hmm. acknowledge your past experience, acknowledge what you,
yeah.
you hope.
Don't go to the past, don't go to the future. Don't. The past is based on memory.
Right, but sometimes memory is in body, and if you're paying attention
to if you're paying attention, then it's in the future. It's not. It's in the present. It's not in the past.
Right. Yeah.
You don't have to go there.
Right. Yeah.
I mean that. You know that's one way of looking at time. Is mm-hmm. with this brain, it's linear time: past, mm-hmm. present, future.
I guess okay. The piece that I'm struggling. I mean, when you were invited to come to Ottawa, or when you made plans to come to Ottawa, was that you living in the future? Was that you seeking desire?
It came into my life.
So it just evolved.
It does. It will. It will.
It just
it will.
Arose.
And
you sort of didn't think about creating the space in which that arose? Or because I guess it's the sort of the sense that, you know, we're you know, doomed.
The fatalistic kind of...
Yes, the fatalism, it's the
I don't go there.
Doing anything, like if I try and do anything for myself in terms of...
No.
My preferences, right? This comes back to preferences.
Beautiful.
If I want to follow my preferences,
right,
and therefore invoking, you know, more a state of more happiness maybe in my life, because obviously I'm going to be a happier person if I'm in my preference than if I'm not in my preference.
It depends where your preference leads you.
Well, there could be unhealthy preferences. I agree, but considering that.
So I mean, I'm actually talking about somebody who lived by their preferences for a long time, and
right.
every one of them was not what I had preferred them to be.
Right. They didn't turn out the way you.
Nothing ever does.
Right. No. Exactly. Yeah. We have to be okay with that. But well, I guess.
Oh, that was interesting. We have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
What
so
does that exactly. mean? But does that mean we have to be okay with that? Don't you just ignore that and go after the next preference? That was interesting. I like that.
Well, I guess it's, for me, a part of my understanding of I don't know if it's satisfaction. I don't even know. We're using different words than I'm used to, so it's kind of a bit of a struggle, but...
Okay, use the words you feel more comfortable.
What do I mean by we have to be okay with that is I can't control the outcome, right? I can have an impulse. I can follow that impulse and hopefully, maybe it'll be an invitation to come and speak in Ottawa. You know, so that arises. And if coming to speak in Ottawa turns out to be something that is not good for me or that I don't enjoy or that... then I have to be okay with that. And then I'm going to follow the next impulse. You know what I mean? So, I guess what I'm questioning is, does that mean that we don't follow any of our impulses? Because that's what life is.
No, impulse, no. That is part of what life is. Impulses, what you're calling impulses, I think, are what I call preferences.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Like and dislike.
Mm-hmm.
I can have what I would call an impulse and dislike it. And still do it.
Okay, yeah.
So, like and dislike, are we talking about, or impulse?
Well, I think like and dislike, but I guess I would like to put some kind of consciousness into that as well, because I think it's just the blindness is the piece that bothers me, because I think that, yeah, we're blind in a sense, but we can still have a sense of, like, asking the questions.
Blind, we're blind because we hope something is different than it is. That's when we're blind.
But if you can accept it for what it is, then is that the
blindness? But you can't accept it for what it is if you're caught by preference, because you don't see what it is. Your preference is stronger than you see. And until people can allow themselves to feel their preference, no problem, but then not be caught by it, then mm-hmm. also see it without the preference.
And I guess that's what I mean by being okay with it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But are you actually speaking about that impulse that is more than... I mean, it's not a logic. It's a hunger, usually. Or a great aversion. Based on who knows what, and there's no sense of even looking at it. You're just being driven or blown by those things.
Yeah.
Oh, I just hate that. You know, whatever. I mean, it doesn't even come up as a word like that. It's just, oh, I just chose to look another way.
Yeah, right.
I mean...
Yeah, and that's the ones that you need to be aware of. I mean, you do need to be aware of it, because it's like, that's like basically cattle prods. And we're like basically moved through life as this cattle prods, which are part of our own being, are pushing us this way or that way. That is, I mean...
Yeah, I was just getting the impression, I know exactly how you're building your argument. It's a fortress. It's lovely. I'll come live there with you. I mean, really, you know, I can believe in this kind of argument, but I don't think that's what she was talking about. In a way, I mean, it's really that thing that's before that argument. It's that movement that was the...
Like you said, you're trying to put consciousness in there.
Mm-hmm.
And this is preference, which is basically a reaction from the past. It's when the past is arising in the present. When you repeat an action that you have survived doing before, when you perform an action... When you repeat an action that you've already done once before, the brain apparently releases endorphins.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know that endorphins are what?
Pleasure.
Opiates. Mm-hmm. Pleasure. When you perform an action that you haven't done before, the brain releases what?
Adrenaline.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what adrenaline does? Puts you on alert.
Mm-hmm.
If you have enough experiences of something you don't like, you don't even notice yourself looking away. So that's like a cattle prod from the past. So depending on where you look, that's where you're gonna, you know, that's where you're gonna collect the data that's gonna set up your next thing that you have an impulse to do. But if there are whole areas of life you can't even look at,
mm-hmm.
that's called blind.
Mm-hmm.
Is that better?
Yeah, I can understand that.
Can we finish this then? Carry on here? That was nice. Thank you.
Thank you.
Both of
you.
So you got that nice long phrase, which I do actually want you to say, and I'm really interested to see what you think of that phrase after you said it two or three times tomorrow. What do you think of that? Does it ring true when you're practicing it? And think about that person, whoever they may be suffering from, those things that I said we avoid thinking about: old age, illness, and death.
Could you
repeat that? Suffering from old age, from illness, and from death.
Is this person?
That person. You can think of that person, that person... either did or is going to or is, doesn't matter. Past, present, future is not an issue with this exercise, because you're working in an emotional realm, not in a material realm. And still conditioned by the blindness. And think, and recall how kind she was, again, or he was. The kindness of that person. Let yourself consider how wonderful it would be to be able to do something to help that person. How wonderful to be able to just give her happiness and the cause of happiness.
to remove all sorrow and remove all the cause of sorrow from our path. And again, you deepen that feeling. You work with it. You know, each step of this, you actually work to deepen the feeling so that you really do, you know, you may have almost a sense like they're right there in front of you, suffering from old age or illness or death, or and you wish that you could touch them. And then decide, this is a two-stage. Decide that you will do whatever you can to provide happiness and freedom from suffering. And having decided that, you make a statement. So first you decide it, and then you make a statement that you are going to provide all the cause and condition needed to bring happiness to that being. Got that?
But how can you?
Well, exactly. But you're talking about what you want. You're defining your feeling.
Desire the...
Yeah, and then naming it. Yeah, I will do it. Like, in yourself. Like, I will decide. We're not getting to whether to the point where you're going to become omnipotent yet. But that's going to be where it goes. That is exactly where it goes. But right now, it's not there. Okay? You're just defining, like, before you realize that you can't, that it's so strong that you're about to try to. This is the first time you've ever allowed it to get this strong, and so you don't know that you can't. It's very Buddhist, isn't it? Okay. Then you move that, so that's the stages. So then when you have some degree of certainty in this aspiration, because it's an aspiration now, yeah, I am going to do this. I aspire to do this. I am going to do this. Then move to the next subject. And what you do is you choose another relative or a friend, someone who you have a kindness, the same kindness to, but it's not quite as pronounced. It's a little less... power. It's not the most important person now. It's like a person who was also kind. And then a friend who is not such a close friend, who's like sort of an acquaintance kind of friend.
You're talking about consecutive, like...
So yeah, first you do what the Tibetans call the mother. Then you would do a father, a relative, depending, you know, their fathers often used to travel. So they sometimes had two or three fathers, so, you know, so a relative that is also close with someone in your family circumstance that you had that kindness with, but not the power of the mother. And then a friend in the neighboring tribe that you saw once, you know, one of the monasteries were there, and the monasteries came together, and they did Tonglen together, and you saw them once every, you know, 3 months or so, by a very great friend, you know, like someone who's an acquaintance friend. And then your roommate who you can't stand. And then an enemy. Somebody you really just, ignorance clicks in when you think of them. You just can't see them. Maybe because they have the bad taste to dislike you for some reason. I don't know. Could be that. Some people do have a problem. But... So you do this with each of those four. And if you have trouble with one, go to the one back before it.
Three. Is it three?
The first one is the mother, then the relative And then the friend.
Oh, there's a relative.
Yeah, the relative or close friend, somebody very, very loving, okay. Right? So mother, it's just levels of kindliness, intimacy. And then an acquaintance friend. So, and then the enemy. And when you're doing it with the enemy, you really realize that. So what this is, this all tomorrow, all this exercise, this meditation and everything, this is all just to break down preference. To actually give you a choice to see other than preference. Because preference is the number one way that we are stopped from being kind. We cannot see when preference is operating. Just toss a little bomb into the midst of your neighborhood and you watch yourself and everybody around you not be able to see clearly because we all prefer no bombs to fall. I'm exaggerating as usual, but you're getting the message, are you? So, it isn't that you want to cut off preference? Certainly not. But you don't want to be bound by it. And in our world, it's more and more important. Because on the one hand, its preference is courted from every side, isn't it? One could say genetically modified. And so with the last one, what you're going to do is you're going to really realize that they were kind. They are kind too. They're kind somewhere. And maybe if not to you this lifetime, in some previous lifetime, but if you really can't go lifetimes, don't worry about it. It is their kindness in the world that you're working with. And then you just think, in fact, may all beings be happy. And that's, you sit in that. In fact, may all beings be happy. You sit in that. And until your mind is distracted, and then you go back to your own sense of kindness. And that's how you end the meditation. You go back to your own sense of kindness and you think, may I have this experience of kindness and practice friendliness throughout the day, period. Or throughout the night, period, or whatever. Right? That's how you end it. Is this just balance that inability to even know what we don't see. I think it was you too that said you were surprised by how much, after a few days, how much preference.
Oh, the noticing of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's been my experience for the past few days. It shows up.
Uh-huh.
Which is amazing.
Which wasn't something that you were that clear about before. It's just like, you know.
Not all the time.
Yeah, but nice to see it. Mm-hmm. Because if your preference is ruling you, who said that you're making free choice? And where do the preferences come from? most of them are conditioned. So how much, you know, at one point I wondered how many lovers who only the name had changed to protect the innocence did I have to repeat that same experience. Well, maybe that's enough. Okay. Who is in charge?
I don't know. I thought you were driving.
Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints? Pebble in the shoe and loving kindness. The Tibetan form. Yeah. It's different than the Theravadin, isn't it? Some of you don't know.
Some of you don't know. I have a question for the, when you choose the distant friend, like to me, I'm thinking that should be the neutral person.
Mm-hmm.
I can think in that term of mm-hmm. the neutral.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. You notice an extremely beautiful gold light in your hearts that spreads through your body. Pours out through your pores in every direction. It just fills this room. It just floods this house. Just moves through this neighborhood. Washes through the whole of Ottawa. Just moves through all of Ontario. The whole world shooting out into space, touching the moon. Down through the core of the earth, in all directions, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters. So wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, or mind, it's just temporarily assuaged. And you think whatever wholesomeness has been gathered, by our coming together, we share it with all beings. So there is this. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered, by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Thank you for your great compassion.